You're listening to KRUULP 100.1 FM, Fairfield, Iowa.
I'm Bill Teeple. I'm here with Alan Cobb, my co-host, and this is Icon Art Radio. We're here with Ken West, the well-known photographer, nationally known digital photographer. Had a show recently at the National Center for Nature Photography, one of the major forums for showing landscape photography. And he's had shows all over the region, and he's a fourth generation photographer. We had one show with him prior to this, and we had to bring him back because we were just getting warmed up talking about the digital photography revolution.
One of the things we were talking about in the last show was how it's not possible to recreate in photography the technology, the actual scene as seen, and that the photographer experienced at the time of taking the photograph. And one of the things I thought of near the end of that show, and we didn't get to talk about, is that we may see that coming at some point, because I know, and Alan, you may know a little bit more about this than me, but I know that there are display monitors, display technologies that are supposed to be available that capture much closer to the actual brightness range in a scene. Right now, an LCD display that you look at, whether it's a television or a computer monitor, its brightness range is much less than a typical scene in, outside in the daylight. But my understanding is they're actually have developed, or soon will be developing, some displays that have that capability. They'll be very expensive, of course, but they do have that great range of brightness capability built into them, and they can actually come very close to emulating that aspect of a scene. And so I could see that if that becomes more available, and if at some point photographs are, we don't have to make them on prints, but you could actually have some type of thin material that would be like the display, the computer display that you could hold in your hand like a print, and that it would digitally create the image on it. At some point down the road, it could be possible, if it had that high brightness range, to actually get something very close. Of course, you'd still have the limit of three-dimensional, but even there, we're seeing how that three-dimensional has changed in terms of movies and things like that. And this is an area I don't know that much about.
Yeah.
But I could see, you actually can see a little glimmer of light where there could be a time, maybe it would be 10 years or 15 years, where you could actually hold something in your hand that feels like paper that would have the brightness range and also be three-dimensional. And you could come very close to recreating the scene right in your hand.
It sounds sci-fi, but you know, if you went back 30 years and we talked about what we're actually doing today, totally sci-fi.
Of course, you'd have to wear dark glasses if you were looking at the part of the picture with the sun in it.
Can you get a tan?
it would light up your room.
That's true.
You could use it as a light source.
But we're laughing, but just in another 20, 30 years, who knows?
It could happen. And of course, and what you were saying, I think when you go back not too far long ago, the photographers, they would have, I personally feel, I know different photographers that could have different opinions about this, and very legitimate opinions, but my personal opinion is that many photographers would have been very interested in working in the world of color. Traditionally, black and white was what was used. Now, there was a pretty important reason why black and white was used, and that's because in the 30s and 40s, for example, when Ansel Adams or other well-known black and white photographers were making photographs, black and white had longevity.
Right.
You could make a black and white negative would last for many years, and a print could last 100 or plus years if it was properly processed. And on the other hand, color print material might last 8 years.
Yeah.
So if you're a fine art photographer...
Now, this was a big issue in the museum and gallery world. That's why they were so...
Yeah, they're not collectible.
With color photographs.
Yeah.
Exactly. And so this was a real problem. And that's... It's not necessarily that those photographers back then were opposed to color. It's just there was no technology available that would allow them to make a color print that could have an equivalent life as the black and white print.
Right.
And so you couldn't be interested in it. My grandfather, he just poo-pooed color. He worked in black and white. He had no interest, even though even in his era, in the latter part of his career, when there was color printing, and many portrait photographers would use color print, the more kind of shopping mall photographers, if you know what I mean, doing portrait work, you know, they would, those prints would only last maybe 10 or 12 years. My grandfather, for him, that it wasn't even a consideration to even think about doing color. It was all black and white and making prints, very fine quality prints that would have a long life. And that was very important to him. So you can, and you can really appreciate that perspective. It's not though that these photographers would have been opposed to color. And I believe that at least some of them, it would be an individual choice, just like today there's still people who work in black and white, but they do it in the digital world. Mm-hmm. They choose to do that because they like the quality of a black and white image, whereas others do color. But now since color materials, print materials, they last up to 100 years and even longer. The prints, they're very close equivalent to a black and white print.
And that's digital you're talking about,
yeah,
right? They
well,
did, they these did are, advance the color film photography printing, did they not?
There were advances in that. There was a type of color printing that people utilized in the 50s and 60s and even up until fairly recently called dye transfer. And that was really the only satisfactory way of making a color print that had longevity. Now, the difficulty with that was it was such a technically sophisticated process that it just was too much for most photographers to attempt to do.
So they had to send out for printing, right? To a master printer.
They would have to have someone write who could do the dye transfer prints.
That's very
for
expensive.
Them. Yeah, it was an expensive, very technical process. And so there are only a few photographers. You know, there are some landscape photographers who mastered dye transfer printing and made beautiful color prints of their landscape work. They'd use view cameras to take the photographs. I believe it was in the 60s, the first easy to use color print material that had some longevity was came from Europe called Cibachromes. And these were using a different type of technology in the color emulsion of the print material.
Is that what you call a C-print?
C-print.
They're called Cibachromes.
Cibachromes.
Yeah.
Well, a lot of photographers that I've run into do Cibachromes.
And they had a much longer life, and I don't remember exactly what they were rated at, but I think at least it was getting up in the probably, I'm guessing a little bit, maybe 40 or 50 year life, something like much more longer and much more acceptable as a medium. And so some photographers would use Cibachromes as a print material, fine art photographers and landscape photographers, and they had their own quality. The surface was really had a really shiny, very high gloss surface on it, and the colors could be very rich and saturated. But it was the development in the it was in the mid to latter part of the 90s when Epson came out with the first really photorealistic inkjet color printing system. And they created a six color system. Traditionally it had been four colors in the printing graphic arts world. And as I'd mentioned before, my dad had developed a six color process at Hallmark. And the Epson came out with printers that use those six colors in the 90s, and this was really the first time it started opening up color printing now to photographers using an inkjet printer. Now the problem was their longevity was somewhat limited. They were dye-based inks, and the dyes that were used in them had limited life, so their longevity was an issue. They quickly followed up with pigment-based inks, and which are now the standard, pretty much the standard, though some dye-based inks have been improved, so they also have a longer life. But so now the standard in the color inkjet printers that fine art and commercial photographers will use are these pigmented-based printers. And they have a very long life. And so the whole, so there was that gradual transition from color print materials in the 50s and 60s that would last maybe 10 or 12 years. No one was interested in that. A few would get involved in the dye transfer process, which was very technical and sophisticated, but only a few were willing to commit to doing that. And then in the 60s and in the 70s, with the advent of Cibachrome, you found more people starting to use color. So, and finally today, with the use of the color printers that are available today.
So I know a lot of photographers, some photographers who were not quite willing to go into digital. They stayed with film, but they were starting to print with a digital printer,
yes,
like you're talking about.
Yes, what happened is you'll find that photographers who had their workflow structured around a film-based system, what they started to do, you would find, is they would still use their film cameras to record the image, but then they would scan the film and digitize it. And so really, those photographers were working in both the film world and the digital world. And you'll still find today photographers who are doing that, who will be using film and then scanning it, because there are scanners that are available, very high quality, and they're able to capture the detail that are existing in the color transparencies or negatives that they photograph, they create when they photograph. So you will find photographers that do that. Though even some of those photographers, I know some of there are some well-known landscape photographers who used to use 4x5 film cameras, large format, the type that Ansel Adams would use, though they might work in color. They have shifted over to digital.
Well, the digital cameras are just getting better and better for capturing information.
So yes, now a medium format digital camera can capture image quality that most people feel is the equivalent of what you could do with a 4x5 view camera, which is a large, very large negative, tremendous amount of image information in that negative, and could be digitized through a scanner. Now they're digital cameras that people feel are capable of really capturing the same equivalent quality. So then as a photographer, as a landscape photographer, you're asked to ask yourself, why carry around something so big? And they also have big film holders that you have to use. There's a limited number of shots that you can take because of just the physical size of the film holders. You're limited in how many, if you're lugging the equipment around out in on a trail somewhere, it limits you. And now, so why do that when you can have this digital camera and can go out and have not be limited at all in the photograph number of photographs that you take? And so there's a lot of reasons, but of course, if you're going to be working with them digitally anyway, scanning them, then you completely jump through that, over that process, so you eliminate that, so your workflow is much more streamlined if you don't have to scan the negatives and go you directly into digital with the camera. So, but there are still photographers who will do it that way, and there's, of course, still photographers using film. If you're a photographer and you've developed a certain workflow and a certain type of look in your prints using certain media, certain chemistry, and certain films and certain print materials, there's really no reason to change, because it might be difficult to exactly duplicate that in your print.
They've got a reputation for a certain style.
Exactly. So you'll find variations, but it's widely accepted now, digital photography, both in the fine art and the commercial photography world.
It's going fast into the new world of photography. I know a lot of photographers who swore they would never shoot anything but film that have just gone over.
I know, and for me, it's heaven, because I have a particular inclination to color. And besides the issues we talked about with color photography, one of the issues was, too, your ability to control color in the printing process is more limited. It's easier in a black and white workflow to control the black and white printing process, to adjust and manipulate tonal values, within certain localized areas and overall in the print that you're making, the black and white print. But when you move over to color film, color printing, using traditional, what I call a wet-based darkroom, using chemistry, you didn't have nearly as much flexibility. You had some, but not nearly as much capability to manipulate, do the kinds of things that you'd like to do. So as someone who likes color, the digital world is great, because not only can I do all the things in the digital world that a black and white photographer could do in using traditional black and white printing and processing, I can do even more. I mean, it's basically up to your own ability to see the scene and be able to translate that through your workflow into a final print. That the ability to have that close connection between that final print and what you were seeing in the original scene, for me, it's in a different level than what existed before. And so that's why, for me, it's an obvious choice to use the digital photography. One of the things that I did want to mention, and that was that I still like to emphasize to people, when they look at the photographs, they're admiring them, they say how much they like them, and wow, this just looks like this or that, whatever compliments they give to the photograph, and they ask me how I did that, I always want to emphasize that the basis of the photograph is the quality of the light at the time I take the photograph. That's the most important thing. And it's not like I can just take any photograph of any scene and somehow, through using all these techniques in the digital world, convert it into something that looks like what I'm showing at the show in the gallery, because you can't do that. If you don't have a good photograph to start with, it doesn't matter whether you're working in the digital world or the old world. There's nothing to do to make it a good photograph. The creation of the photograph takes place at the time the photographer snaps the shutter. It's that way, it's always been that way, and it's currently that way now. There's no way to get around that. There's no technology that can change the quality of the light at the time that you took the photograph. There's no technology that can do that.
So you can't get a good performance out of a bad score.
Exactly. Using that analogy of the negative being the score and the performance being the print. Yeah, doing that translation, taking your digital negative and converting it into a print, expressing it as a print, if you don't have a good digital negative to begin with, which is based upon the quality of the light. That was what the lesson my grandfather told me when I was a little boy. The most important thing in photography is the quality of the light. And everything I've learned since then, all my experiences just reinforce that little simple aphorism that he gave me, that little simple instruction when I was very small. And I've always remembered that. And it's very true. And it's hard for people to realize that unless they've gone through the process of really becoming a photographer, learning to see the light, learning to visualize what a scene will look like when you convert it into a print. Most people, when they look at things, they see things differently. They're aware of something. They'll look at a scene and they think it looks beautiful, but they don't really have any idea of how to capture it or translate it into a final print. And that's one of the skills of a good photographer, is that they understand how to look at a scene, evaluate it, and they can see the light. You see it in a different way. As one of the things I always enjoy in landscape photography, for me, one of the most enjoyable parts of it is the actual process of taking the photographs. Being out in an early morning on a trail or a byway somewhere in some beautiful area, when the light is just starting to form and you just start going from a flat looking landscape because the sun is below the horizon, and then you start to see texture starting to form, you start seeing some three-dimensionality coming into the scene as the light begins to shape it. And there's those times when the quality of the light, because of the way the atmospheric conditions are, it creates a certain quality of light. The scene becomes incredibly spectacular. And it usually only lasts a few minutes for each scene. And your job then as a landscape photographer is to try to capture it. I think of it as I'm documenting this beautiful display of nature's creativity and intelligence. And that's what I see the role of a landscape photographer is doing. But it's all, you watch that quality of the light and you see it shaping. You see the highlights forming. You see the three-dimensionality. You see the texture coming together as the light shapes it. And that's what a photographer is looking for. And that's the basis of the landscape photographs that I exhibit, is that process. And so that's what's enjoyable to me, is that process of experiencing that and then being able to go through the workflow that I have to manifest it as a print.
I just want to insert here before we go on, because this is fascinating, it's beautiful, is that this is, for those who just tuned in, we're interviewing Ken West. This is Icon Art Radio on KRUU FM 100.1. So,
I was just going to comment that I think one of the, it may seem a little mundane, but I think one of the contributions that your work makes to the general viewer who probably hasn't thought very much about photography, they've got a camera, most people have a camera, and they go out and they point it at things and press a button and they get a picture. And that's, to them, that's the process of photography, is pointing and clicking. And I think what's kind of stopping people in their tracks is that when they look at your prints, they're thinking, wait a minute, there's no way that I get that when I point at something and click. What's going on here? And you're really, in effect, you're introducing them to the other component of photography, namely the photographer. It makes a difference who's taking the picture, because the point and click photographer is done as soon as the finger has twitched, whereas a fine art photographer is doing something. And this what we referred to sort of, you know, mechanically earlier on as post-production, that's really the production. It's the work of the artist to see the picture and click the shutter and deal with what the camera has captured and produce output of some kind. In your case, it's a print. But these prints are prints that people haven't seen before, because you don't get that when you just point and click. Even with a $10,000
really
camera,
really
you don't get it.
It's a gray area, because what people tend to think is, you must have a better camera than I do.
Yeah, everybody's asking, you know, well, what
this
kind of camera should I get to do what you're doing?
Like, yeah.
And it's not like the button that's doing it.
Well, that was always the lesson. Another one of the lessons I learned as a small boy from my grandfather was, he always told me, well, it's not the camera, it's the photographer, obviously, that makes the picture. It's, you know,
obvious to you, but not to all these legions of people.
I have a high quality camera, high quality lenses, and there is part of photography is technique, of using that equipment properly to get a very sharp picture. I have, without getting into that type of discussion, but that goes, that's something, of course, what I would say is your point in click shooter or amateur photographer, they wouldn't be aware of those kinds of things unless they were serious about photography, the technical, that technique side of it too.
Yeah.
There's a lot of aspects to photography. I think one of the things that I've always enjoyed about it, it's really a merger of both hemispheres of the brain. There's very much what I call the aesthetic side, the intuitive aesthetic side, that appreciates beauty, that appreciates wonder, that it's non-linear, it's a whole different world that you're working in. But there's also very much a technical side to photography, whether it's operating the camera or whether it's being able to create accurate color reproduced prints. A lot of times people look at my print and say, well, is that the way it looks when you look at it on your monitor? And I say, well, yeah, that's how it looks, because, again, this is part of the technique and the technology. It's part of the knowledge of being a photographer is how color is managed throughout an entire workflow of reproducing it. And that would be true of black and white, too, how the whole process of managing all that. And there's a specific body of knowledge dealing with that to be a good photographer, you have to know about that also. So there's many different facets to it in terms of why, when someone says, well, I click it, it doesn't look like that even on my computer monitor, and certainly when I make a print, it doesn't look like it either. And I guess the only thing I can say is a little bit like, you can pick up a guitar and I could teach you the G chord and the A chord and the D chord, and you could strum a tune, and with a little bit of work, you could learn how to finger those chords and strum it. But that's not going to make you, you know, Eric Clapton or someone else. Yeah. I'm not saying that I'm Eric Clapton in photography by any means, but I'm just saying there is a difference. There's that sense. Yeah. But I think people realize, just because they have a guitar and they know how to strum a few chords, that, you know, there is a difference. Yeah. There is a level of knowledge and ability to work with the tools. Well, I view it as like any artist. You have certain tools and there's certain techniques that you have to work with. And part of being a good artist or being a good photographer is mastering those tools so that they're secondary to what your vision is. You're not caught up in any of these things, any of that. That's totally secondary. So it's a fluid process. So all you're focused on, when I go out, I'm just focused on looking for light. That's really all I'm doing. When I go out to photograph, I'm looking for light. And it doesn't really matter what it is. It could be a commercial assignment, or it could be doing some photography, landscape and nature photography. I'm looking for a certain quality of light. I know if I can find that, I'm going to get a really compelling picture. I'm going to have something to work with because I'm capturing light. And it's light that creates three-dimensional. I have that challenge. People are going to look at my pictures on a two-dimensional screen, or if they're published on a two-dimensional magazine page or a two-dimensional print. I need to make it look three-dimensional to them. So they're drawn into it. And so the vision that I see, which is three-dimensional, I have to understand how to make that into three dimensions. And so I'm just, that's where I'm absorbed when I'm doing my photography. The technical part of it, the snapping of the shutter and all these things, those are like another part of my mind operating. It's like a second track going.
It's the combination of the artist and the scientist, and the process of producing a work of art is then, once you have mastered the skills, the process of getting out of the way and letting the process happen spontaneously and naturally with that basis of knowledge and experience in the background.
You've been listening to Icon Art Radio, a production of Iowa Contemporary Art, Fairfield.